Hey, this is James from StrawPunk.com.
And this is his co-host, CPS Mike. How are you doing this week, man?
Tired, but good, excited for, I'll be off-grid the next 2 days.
That's awesome. And I've got an announcement for all of our listeners out there. I've begun the paleo diet.
Sweet baby Jesus.
Yep, I finally jumped on the bandwagon for that, so... Good. Just did a bout of shopping, getting all my meals planned for the week. A lot of steak. A lot of steak, a lot of pork.
Pork.
I bought several cans of Spam.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just basically going for meat and like stuff like that.
Veggies.
Yeah. I'm trying to adhere to four rules that my good friend gave me. No grains, no dairy, no fruit, and no legumes, as you like to call them.
Yeah.
All right, but enough about my fat ass. Let's
if you fall off the wagon, we're gonna spear you on the air.
You need to weigh me. Do you have a scale?
I do have a scale.
Well, you need to weigh me. We're gonna start doing weekly weigh-ins. You need to start bringing the scale with you to the pod cave.
All right,
and we're gonna weigh in before each episode from now on, so we can see what my progress is.
Sweet, we'll do that. All right, so today it's my great pleasure to finally welcome onto the podcast my friend DB from FloridaHillbilly.com, which is my oldest blog buddy to date. I met him shortly after I launched Survival Punk, and we've back and forth emailed for years since then.
Yet you've never told me about him. Are you hiding him from me?
That's weird. I mean, I've
you got a survival partner on the side there?
No, I mean... He's guest posted on my website a few times, and I think I've guest posted on his, maybe.
Oh, that Florida hillbilly.
Yeah, the only Florida hillbilly I know. So anyway, you know, we got him on the show. I want to say possibly he was harder to wrangle in than Paul Wheaton.
Good God, man.
You were there for the interview. He just started talking, and it's just like, well, just let him go. Just... Have at it, and you know, because it was entertaining, and I prefer a guest that wants to ramble than a guest that doesn't want to talk.
Absolutely, absolutely, and we're going to get right into that interview. But first, we got to tell you a bit about our good friends over at JMBullion.com,
the best place online to get all your gold and silver needs. Best prices, free shipping. Make sure you check them out at the banner on the left hand margin, JMBullion.com.
One of the best things to invest in other than bullets and meat.
Yeah, because we don't invest in beans around here, buddy.
Oh, heck no. And speaking of food, if you want good paleo food, where's a good place to go, man?
Wellfoodco.com.
Wellfoodco.com, inventors of the paleo MRE.
The paleo MRE, the carne bars, which are delicious, paleo cookies, beef jerky, protein, all grass-fed, all organic, all amazing.
Yeah, just find the banner on the right-hand side, probably somewhere near the JM Bullion one. Click on the one that says Well Food Co. and start eating healthy. And guess what? You know what a great thing to do with the food you get over at wellfoodco.com?
What is a good thing to do?
Go camping with it.
Yes. Go camping and then stock up on all your gear from campingsurvival.com.
Campingsurvival.com. If you're ready to bug in or bug out, you can get your bug out bags there. You can get many good things. Like, what else they got going on over there?
They've got fish antibiotics. They've got the Life Straw, which I just brought, and I tried it at your place in the stream that you didn't so much like, but it will keep you alive.
Cows poo in that water.
So? That's what the Life Straw is for. It filters down all the bacterial elements. So
yeah, you can actually see the video on our YouTube channel, the Survival Punk YouTube channel.
Yeah, which should be getting a bit more active. And speaking of getting active, I'm gonna make Mike go out and film some with me too, and we'll have more videos of me and Mike, and maybe some exclusive videos.
We're gonna whip my lard ass into shape, whether I like it or not. But right now, yeah, I'm planning on going camping with the gear that I get when I go to survivalpunk.com. Find the banner on the right-hand side that says...
CampingSurvival.com.
Click there and get ready for the collapse. Well, without further ado, it is my great pleasure, and
there
I know it's your great pleasure.
There is some further ado.
There's further ado?
Yes.
Damn, I knew I spelled something.
Yes, yes. we would like you to join the Survival Punk Army.
Absolutely. I almost forgot about that.
I didn't, because Survival Punk Army is paying the bills right now.
Yes, Survival Punk Army is paying those bills. You go there, you can get discounts from anywhere from 10 to 20% off your orders from 11 different vendors.
Yes, for all the stuff that you want in Survival and Paleo World.
Plus, you're going to be getting exclusive content from us whenever we make it.
E-books,
absolutely.
E-books, all of the wonderful Survival Punk podcast episodes in zip files of 10 episodes. So the next 10 is about to go up, and then shortly after, the next 10 will go up. Because this is podcast episode number 29, so 30 is right around.
Oh my god, really? Are we already up to 29?
We're up to 29.
Dang, we've almost hit trips.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Just imagine when one day we're like, this is James and Mike from SurvivalPunk.com bringing you episode number 1400.
Yes. Hopefully on Sirius XM radio.
Maybe. Maybe we'll get syndicated one day.
I hope either that or we get our own HBO show.
Yeah.
I don't know. But anyway.
Please do consider joining the Survival Punk Army. Remember, we pay the bills and we enjoy it.
We take cash. Do you still take bitcoins and meat and precious metals?
All that good stuff. I could buy stuff on the internet with the bitcoins and whatnot.
Go to survivalpunk.com, find it, find the little spot, it's all over the place. Because remember, the Survival Punk Army wants you!
And with that, now...
Now, no further ado.
Now we can welcome on our good friend, Florida Hillbilly, DB. How are you?
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, just wrapping up a few last things, and then I'll be ready.
All right.
Oh...
Had to go let my wife smell my finger.
That sounds terrible.
That's fantastic. I was out, my chiropractor has an office in town, and I've been gradually indoctrinating them into starting to grow some of their own food.
And, yeah.
They pay like $6 a bunch for basil. They're my chiropractor's Asian. Although she's Canadian, she's of Asian descent.
Right.
And she's just eating it up because this is stuff that her parents and her grandparents have always done, and she's slipped away from it, and she'd like to get back into it. And she's probably not quite 30 yet, but very interested in eating healthy. So it bothers them all that they spend $6-7 on a bunch of basil, and they consume it a lot. Apparently they drink water with basil in it, but whatever. So I'm like, well, just grow it. It's probably the easiest thing in the world to grow. Oh, really? What do you got to do? I said, I went out behind their office, and they've got an AC unit that's got a water drain. It's condensation. It's a constant source of water. So I said, well, what you do is just put yourself in a self-watering container back here. And how do you do that? I said, you know what? I'll put it all together. I'll plumb it all in. I'll set it all up for you. Really? So I was out taking clippings of my basil. And getting it to start, I figured I'd give them some plants instead of seeds. So my fingers smell like basil right now. My wife really likes that. My wife wanted me to let you know that she said to say hello.
Hi.
Hello. So I rant quite a bit when I read your stuff, and she reads along with me. So it was only about a week ago that I read your About Me, and you mentioned me in there twice. I'm like, who the hell is this guy to think that I'm someone?
Yeah.
And it, what's funny is that you wrote, well, DB wrote an article. I've got to write another one. And I feed on that, too. Every time I see you write something or Brian and Stephanie over at the Wannabe Homesteaders, whenever they write something, I'm like, oh, shit, I got to write something now.
Yeah, that's... When I get the email thing and it's like, ah, crap.
Yep.
So I've been getting a lot better now. I got out of my, 6-8 month long writer's block.
Mine's not writer's block. I'm like, oh, I should write about this. Oh, I could write about this. I could write. And once I sit down and do it, it just flows. It's like me flapping my gums. I can do it easily.
Right.
Might not be good content, but I can do it, you know, something. And that's really, from our standpoint, all we want is something out there to see that Google wants to see your refresh, so you move up the hit list so you get more traffic. It's all about the traffic. No matter what you write, it's about the traffic. So it's just,
I've noticed, like, sometimes the articles I write that I'm like, it's just something to put out there, you know, it's not anything to like brag about, they're the ones that get the most comments.
Absolutely. Like, it's the same thing with me. I'm like, oh, that's a great article, and I get nothing. And I'm like, right. I throw something together just to, as like a space filler, and I'm like, that's complete shit. I have a very low opinion of journalists, and I was a journalism major in college. One of the things that I'm most happy about failing in my life was having not followed through with a journalism degree. But when I see something like, oh, hell, they wouldn't even post that in a newspaper, and I get stupid amounts of traffic from, like, what the hell is that? It's filler, which just means that the masses, all they want is bullshit.
Sadly, yeah, sadly.
Yeah, the movie Idiocracy is slowly but surely coming through.
Killing me. It's funny because it's true.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Has my co-host introduced himself?
No, he
has the manners of a Florida hillbilly.
I just kind of crept into the conversation. Wow. No, I'm Mike, or as I started calling myself on the show, CPS Mike.
CPS Mike?
Yep, Couch Potato Survivor Mike.
Awesome.
Yeah. Now, basically, the way the show's set up, he's the knowledgeable one, and he will sit there, you know, just going off about whatever that I have no idea what he's talking about. So I'm basically standing in for the audience who would be asking questions.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know a few things, though. Don't get me wrong. I'm not completely blonde on it, but
nice.
Yeah. All right, I'm gonna do a quick intro and then we'll just jump right into it.
Oh, hang on a second. Sorry, I had to cough. Did that get muted?
Oh no, this is all. I'll edit this out anyway.
I don't want to cough in your ear. So, Mike, my name's Daryl. I go by DB, Florida Hillbilly, whatever. I've got an ex-wife, so I have far more colorful names. If you want to hear those.
Oh, yeah, I've got one of those too. No worries.
Mm-hmm. All right. Hey, it's my great pleasure to welcome onto the podcast probably my oldest blogging buddy, DB from Florida Hillbilly. How are you doing today?
Pretty good. As I like to start out all my videos, Florida Hillbilly here. My kids actually poke fun at me every time I go to hit the record button. They say, oh, here comes Dad, Florida Hillbilly here. So, doing well. Glad to be talking with you, man.
Awesome.
Go ahead.
How's the weather like down there in Florida today?
It's horrible. It's like 78 degrees. Humidity's like 90 or something.
Oy gavalt.
I just stepped outside long enough to feed the rabbits and the quail before getting on the radio with the machines. Oh, shit. I just stepped outside to go feed and water the animals before coming in here to talk with you. And I was out there for about 10 minutes, and it was about 14 minutes too long. I'm sweating like a pig.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's interesting. See, I've had both rabbits and quail before. Never on a farming scale or anything like that.
He just has them as pets. He had a goat one time as a pet, and he won't ever let me eat any of this stuff.
No, I've had four pet roosters before.
Roosters are fun if you can get by with them. Chickens, mm-hmm. I can sit in the backyard and watch chickens for hours. They're so much like the velociraptors. It's kind of creepy. They really...
No, they really are. No, we had my favorite out of all those livestock top type pets I had. I had this rooster named Thing. He was a rescued fighting cock, basically. And he is like the smartest animal I've ever had. They say you can't housebreak a chicken, but mine was trained to like go in the toilet.
That's weird.
Yeah, we'd bring him in at night, and he would just go right into the bathroom, perch, roost up on the damn toilet seat the whole time, and just with his tail right over the bowl. We'd just come in and flush the next morning.
I wish you could teach my brother that.
I don't do humans, sorry.
So, who is DB? Tell us about you and how you created Florida Hillbilly.
Let's see. I'm gonna be completely candid. I don't say this very often. I was born in Detroit, Michigan.
Wow.
That's where my dad's from.
It's a great place to be from if you can get out of there. Mm-hmm. My grandfather was from West Virginia. My mom had gotten divorced from my father. We moved to West Virginia. Complete culture shock. I was in the third grade. It was over Christmas break when we moved in. The kids in the third grade were, well, it's West Virginia schools compared to inner city schools. I felt a little out of place.
I bet.
I coasted for probably 4 or 5 years on my third grade education. Love West Virginia, though. West Virginia offers a way of life that it's really hard to find these days. Everybody, it's a rather poor economically state. Once in a while, you'll find a decent job. This is 25 years ago. It's improved since then, but back then, everybody was poor, and nobody knew any better. And if anybody needed anything, the neighbors were fantastic for helping out. It's the only place I've seen where everybody believes in a rising tide raises all ships kind of thing. Everybody is completely 100% on board with helping everybody else out because it just helps them all. Now, that's not to say that you don't get a jerk once in a while, but for the most part, it was a fantastic place to grow up. I learned a level of understanding and compassion for my fellow man that I still get odd looks at these days. I work for myself now, and folks are like, why aren't you charging me for that? I don't need to. Well, but everybody else would. I'm like, it's not me. I was in the area. It was simple. There's no reason for me not to do that. So I moved down to Florida here looking for work. My grandparents had retired here. My mom moved down here. I went into service, came back out of the service, and all my family had left West Virginia. Met a girl here, married her. And it's about a minute after we got married, I started deciding that we needed to go back to West Virginia. And I spent 10 years trying to do that. And I had her talked into it a couple times. Didn't really work out. Mm. Between work and whatnot. I have a computer background, military computer background, security, and had a security clearance job lined up back in West Virginia. And it was when the economy was in the tank, and I couldn't sell the house, and I couldn't walk away from it. Had I walked away from it, I'd lost the security clearance, couldn't have the job. Kind of a catch-22. So we never left. I go back every year, try to go deer hunting. I love it. The week of Thanksgiving, I tell my in-laws, it's the state holiday in West Virginia. And they're like, Thanksgiving's the state holiday? No. Deer season is the state holiday. Schools closed down. Businesses closed down. So I go up there, and for 2-3 months after we got back to Florida, after having been in West Virginia for a week, I had what my friend Blue Tang affectionately calls a case of the black ass. It's like a long-term depression thing. I just wanted to be away from where I was. And it's the same thing day after day, week after week. Oh, honey, let's move. And after about 3 or 4 years of this, I remember this clearly. It was the 2nd of February. She said, I came up to her and I said, I want to go back to West Virginia. Can we look at this? She says, you know what? Whenever you're ready. I'm like, what? She says, yeah, absolutely. Whenever you're ready, start packing today if you like. I said, seriously? She goes, yeah. But the girls and I have two daughters. She says, the girls and I are going to stay here. So Mama drew a line in the sand and then concreted it in. And wow. My choices were basically my love for West Virginia or my love for my wife and family. And I'd been listening to Jack Spirko at the time, and Jack, James, you're a listener there. You had the same type of story. Jack says you've got to establish yourself online, whatever it is. Establish yourself online. I was in journalism before I went into service in the college. I did quite a bit of writing in high school. I loved writing. I'm a compulsive reader. I can't walk by words and not read them. It's a compulsion of mine. So I love to write, and on top of that, I come from a family of preachers, politicians, and used car salesmen. So BS runs deep in my blood. So I look at writing as simply taking my words and putting them on paper. So I like to write. Jack says I need to establish myself. I needed to find an outlet to allow myself to acclimate to Florida. Having lived here almost 20 years at that point, I was still not established as I didn't feel local. So I started. I sat down and I thought, well, I got to come up with a name. I went through the same thing you went through, James, trying to come up with a name that fit. And I am purely a hillbilly at heart, but I'm in Florida, and the Florida hillbilly thing was available. I snagged it up and started writing. I think the first day I wrote 5 articles. Wow! I sent them out to a couple friends, and they're like, "Hell, this is pretty good stuff." I have one friend. He's actually a lawyer by trade, but you wouldn't know to talk to him outside of work. And he says, "You're writing too much." I said, "What do you mean? You're gonna get burnt out?" And I'm like, no. I'm full of this stuff, man. And I kept plugging. I'd put out two or three articles a day for a while. And then I was putting out 2,000 words easy on some days, sometimes more than that.
Oof.
And I'm like, all right, you know what? I need to pace myself. So I went to an article a day, 5 days a week. And I did that solid for like 2.5 years. And one day I stepped away. I'm like, I did exactly what my friend said. I got burnt out. And right now I'm lucky to put out an article a week. I've got the drive, but, my wife calls me short-term compulsive. I'll have a hobby I want to learn something about. And I love the internet. Google, however much they track me, they are my friend because they track everybody else. If I want to learn to do something, there's not too much you can't learn online if you put your mind to it. A little bit of research, a couple clicks, and you've got someone willing to show you how to do something. If it's programming a computer, fixing a car, Google culture, raising quail, you name it. If you want to learn it, I believe you could sit down 8 hours a day and get a better education online than you could paying $40,000 at a top school a year.
Oh, yeah.
And I've got a buddy that learned to swim online, believe it or not.
That doesn't surprise me. It does not surprise me one bit. And in my opinion, I don't want to talk badly about higher education because education itself is a fantastic thing, no matter where you get it. The college scenario is a financial leech preying upon your desire to improve yourself. I guess that's the best way that I can put it. I think college is a good idea. The way that colleges are set up is a horrible idea. If you can't get your college paid for in advance, if you have to go into debt for it, there are very few careers that I think it's worth it. I have a good friend who has a political science, is a political science major, doesn't use it at all.
Mm-hmm.
He was planning on being Alex Keaton from Family Ties.
Yeah.
He actually had an internship on Capitol Hill and met a girl who also has a 4-year college degree and does not use it.
Mm-hmm.
It frustrates me to see folks going into debt for something that's going to do nothing but make them write one more check a month that doesn't go away.
Yeah, we've actually got a friend who's got how many degrees does he have? 2 or 3?
Gabriel?
Yeah.
Gabriel has 1 degree in history. His dream was to be Indiana Jones. And he got this from a private college, and he's probably $40,000 to $60,000 in debt.
And he works at a pawn shop.
Yeah.
I mean, is it like
he's in management, but still, he works at a pawn shop. He's not using his history degree at
all.
No,
not at all.
So it's not like he's putting values on historical items coming in.
Yeah.
No, he's not like Pawn Stars. He's not the buddy that knows everything about everything. He just does normal pawns for, like, you know, generic speakers and stuff.
Well, it's like you said, he got a history degree because he wanted to be Indiana Jones. I mean, there's people out there that get criminology degrees because they want to be Batman.
Right.
His sister has a criminology degree, and she has not ever used it.
Yeah, see? Yeah.
I have a brother who spent 12 years in college, I believe. Yeah, about that. And he just started into the workforce recently. And
12 years.
In debt. Yeah, he's got several degrees. He decided that it was easier to keep going to school and keep rolling in debt than it was to go out and get a job.
Oh, my God.
and to be honest, he didn't know what he wanted to do. I remember one time he had his associates. He's like, I'm going to go to medical school in Mexico. It's cheaper. And be what? He goes, I don't know, a doctor or maybe a dentist or maybe a vet.
I don't know.
See, I went to college for 1 year, and at the end of that year, or before the year was even over, I knew that college was not for me, and the $4,000 I racked up in 1 year, I was like, this is too much debt. How will I ever pay $4,000 in debt? And I dropped out then.
Well, you know, it's a good thing, because you were just heading straight down a road of writing a master's thesis paper on the difference between apples and oranges.
Yeah.
Now, I do know someone, again, I'm going to go back to Blue Tang. He has a 4-year degree in some sort of meat science from the University of Florida. And it sounds crazy. He tells me that his senior year, he would go down to the lab, white coat, you know, shuffle in late, go into the freezer, take a slice of hanging beef, hanging pork, put it under a microscope, go through it, take some notes, Go back into the freezer, take a slice at the same section, just the next slice down, take it over to the kitchen area, cook it, taste test it, take some more notes. And that was part of his senior year.
And, wow.
And now he has, that's like 7 or 8 smokers in his backyard. He could take a, I dropped off a pig to him one day. He had a job working in a retail store. I dropped off a wild boar. It was actually a wild sow, hog, dropped off to him. And in a cooler, on his 15-minute break, he goes around back, skins it out, dresses it out, quarters it, throws it back into the cooler, and then throws what's left, the feet and the head and whatnot and hide into the dumpster, and then puts the cooler back in his truck, and he goes back inside, and nobody's the wiser. 15 minutes, he's gone, and he's dressed out a hog behind the retail store.
Wow.
The guy is a phenomenal person when it comes to meat and what muscle is what and how to cure it. I'll drop off a pork loin. You'll spend like $2.50 a pound. Drop it off to him. He'll cut it in half. He'll brine it for a week. He'll smoke it off, and I'll have for the cost of $2.50 a pound to me. He'll hand me back homemade Canadian bacon that you cannot find in the store. This quality is amazing.
Oh, you're making James's mouth water over here.
Yeah.
it's a beautiful thing. He actually does the same thing I do. We do repair work on pools. I've trained him into the business. So I'll throw him work every once in a while. And for whatever reason, he feels like he's obligated to pay it back in meat. I love the man.
I would gladly take sponsorships on my website in meat. If people pay me in meat, the barter value is so much higher than money
absolutely.
To me.
We advertise for that. That we'll accept meat as payment.
I can't say that I blame you.
Yeah.
This guy is a wizard with animal protein. And interestingly enough, he is also he's diabetic, genetic, not from eating. He weighs he's like 6'2" and weighs like 190 pounds maybe. He's a beanpole. And we were at a local barbecue chain, Sonny's, and I ordered the special, and he ordered the special, and I threw mine down. I ordered no bread, no sauce, steamed vegetables, side salad, no dressing, and I threw all mine down, and he's halfway through his, and I'm finished. Waitress comes back, and I'm like, yeah, can I get that, I had a half a chicken. I said, can I get the beef brisket special? She said, the whole special? I said, yeah. I said, same thing, no bread, no sauce. All right. So I get it, and I'm eating it, and he's like, dude, you're going to be the size of a house. I'm like, dude, it's this paleo diet. I just learned about it. I love it, man. I can eat like a horse, and tomorrow I'll weigh less. He's like, you're full of it. I'm like, I'm telling you. So I gave him some information, and I said, I read somewhere that diabetics are using the paleo diet to help address their symptoms. He had been on some diabetic medication, his sugar numbers, and I don't know anything about what the numbers should be or shouldn't be. I just know that he was around 180, 190 on this medicine. The doctor wanted him to do all this crazy stuff with this medicine that was costing him an arm and a leg. And Blue Tang went over and did a little bit of research, read into it. He's like me. He likes to research things a lot. Went on the paleo diet for 30 days without the medication. His sugar dropped about 20 points steady. He's been on it for about 2 years now. His numbers run around 80 and 90, not 180, 190. He's dropped 100 points on his sugar, eating animal protein, leafy greens, very little in the way of – he's not pure paleo, but he understands the concepts. Very little in the way of grains. And just by regulating his diet, he's able to drop 100 points off of his sugar count. He goes back to a doctor a year later. Doctor says, see, I told you that medicine's working. He's like, Doc, I ain't been on it for a year. He's like, what are you doing? He told him. Doc says, well, that doesn't work. The last time he went to that doctor.
Oh, my God. Well, that doesn't work.
Diet is so much of what we do. I am a huge fan of the paleo diet. I feel better having eaten that way. I had chronic foot pain for years and years. It was a running joke with my kids. If my kids wanted money, they'd rub my feet, and I'd give them $10, $20.
Damn.
For Christmas, several years in a row, my wife would give me a 30-minute masseuse session for someone to rub my feet, go to the massage parlor, and they just rub my feet. That was a huge thing for me. I went on the paleo. I was actually going to a CrossFit gym with my wife. She finally drugged me in there. They had a $20 for 5-week session. I'm too cheap to pay the full price. So I went and tried that. And they do this thing in your warm-up. It's an hour session. About 45 minutes of it is the exercise. During the warm-up, they get in a circle, and they're like, oh, yeah, the question of the day is, what book are you reading? What movie are you watching?
Huh.
And the question one day, after about 4 weeks into it, I was almost through my 5-week period, and the first week is brutal. I worked harder in CrossFit than I did when I went to basic training. Now, mind you, I was 25 years older, but they beat my ass down. I would come in there, and the first thing I would say is F you. I don't want you to talk to me, or kiss my, you know, these guys. But I understanding that I wasn't mad at them. It was my way of dealing with the absolute anguish and physical pain I was going through trying to adjust. And I'd gotten past the wall. I was coming in. I feeling pretty damn good, feeling younger. I hadn't gone to the paleo diet yet. I was still eating, you know, like the masses eat. And the question of the day was, why are you here? And almost universally, it was to get in shape or to lose weight. Everybody's answer. And this 23-year-old guy who's 6 foot tall and weighed 140 and had muscles on muscles and ripples everywhere says, well, you know that diet's 90% of losing weight, not exercise. Yeah. I was gone a week later. I paid attention to what they had been eating. Spurco, again, referring to Jack, as much as I hate to give him any plugs, we don't see eye to eye on several things. I can get into that later if you'd like.
Sure.
Jack lost a bunch of weight doing it. I read some stuff by Mark Sisson, and I read some stuff by Rob Wolf, and there's enough science behind it in my mind. It was a good enough sales pitch that I said, I'll try it for 30 days.
Yeah.
I went cold turkey on paleo on a Monday. About 10 days later, I woke up, and I usually wake up, my feet hurt every day, just consistently. I woke up, and I'm like, damn, my feet don't hurt. And I got to thinking, like, it's been several days since they hurt. And that was it. When I realized that the diet has changed how I feel physically, I bet you I haven't eaten a loaf of bread complete in 3 years.
Oh, yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I fall off the wagon. Last night, I stopped at a friend's house or at a friend's office, and there was pizza there, and I fell off the wagon. I bounced for about an hour and a half, and I woke up this morning feeling a little sluggish.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I'm a ribeye for breakfast kind of guy. Paleo is fantastic. I'm not saying it works for everybody. I'm no doctor. Oh, hang on a second. My wife's phone. Hang on.
Hang on, guys. Let me go deliver this.
Do, 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 do.
Oh. Elbow pop.
Yeah, that sounded painful.
No. Feels amazing.
I really got to kill them.
Sorry, guys. I tried to have everything lined up, door locked, everybody's warned, and then my wife has her phone plugged in next to me. Best laid plans of mice and men.
Yeah.
So, where was I? Paleo, food, feel better. I don't even remember.
Yeah, somewhere in there.
On the paleo, I think you covered paleo pretty well.
That's something he's been trying to get me to do forever now. I'm a pretty big guy. I'm around 290 pounds right now, 295, and I feel like crap most of the time.
Yeah.
It's impossible to get me to start anything new. Once I finally do get started, I will go into it whole hog. I mean, he put me on a diet one time that caused me to lose like 60 pounds in just a little over a month and a half.
Wow, that doesn't sound healthy.
Oh, it wasn't. It was to win a contest.
Well, then at least you had proper motivation.
The day I won, I got off that diet.
I have found that eating this way, I feel younger. I'm 45 now, and when I'm strict on the paleo, I feel 10, 15 years younger. And it's just amazing the amount of energy I have, the stamina I have. I work better on less sleep, less food intake. It's you can't tell me that it doesn't work. I'm no doctor. Again, I'm going to say I'm no doctor. This works for me. And everybody that I've talked to, it works for them. My stepdad is a World War II veteran. He goes to the VA hospital. He has some heart problems. He was talking to one of the specialists. The specialist pulled him and my mom aside and said, listen, I can't officially tell you to do this, but go look into the paleo diet. This is a VA doctor off the record telling my 86 years old stepdad, go paleo. It will help your heart condition.
What a good forward thinking doctor.
Yeah. Oh, and not just forward thinking, but willing to open his mouth, even though he said it's off the record. I have speaking of doctors and forward thinking, she's 14 now. When she was 5, she started to develop breasts on one side as a 5-year-old.
Oh.
Took her to her pediatrician. Pediatrician says she checks out fine. There's we have a specialist in the state. He specializes in pediatric precocious puberty, which is premature aging in children. So we called him up, set an appointment. It was 5 weeks to get into his office.
Oi.
5 weeks. And all he does is screening for precocious puberty. We got in there. He says that his entire week is taken up with dealing with screening. It's just screening person after person after person. He's the only person in the state again. He has 11 clients that actually have it. State of Florida, 11. And he's booked solid with people just being screened. They did an x-ray of my daughter's hand. And you can determine your physical age by comparing the amount of bone to the amount of cartilage in your fingers.
Mm-hmm.
It's rather interesting. I took the x-rays and said, go ahead and on your way out, set up the appointment for as soon as you can get back in here. By the time you get back, we'll definitely have had the x-rays for a week or two. It was another 5-week wait. Go back in there. She's fine. He says, I can't prove this. Now, this is 10 years ago. He says, I can't prove this, but I'm almost certain that it's the food you're feeding your daughter. The growth hormones that we put into our animals are being passed on to the humans.
Yeah.
He said, go as much as you can, go to a organic diet. As a minimum, do organic dairy and organic eggs. And that's kind of what started me. Long before the Florida Hillbilly thing, I had chickens in my backyard. I live on a quarter acre in town where I'm not supposed to have them. Luckily, I have neighbors. It's amazing. The only time you get in trouble with law and things like this is when the law is informed. And typically, the only way the law is informed is you have an unhappy neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
Like it or not, that's human nature. It's amazing how much I can get away with in my backyard with chickens and ducks and rabbits and all kinds of crazy stuff. I have antennas in my backyard. I'm a ham operator now. I've got all this crazy stuff. I've got plants growing everywhere. I've got grass that's knee high in places because I don't mow. I don't spray for bugs. I go next door every once in a while. I'm like, oh, here's some smoked rabbit, or here's a dozen eggs. My neighbors absolutely love me. I live less than a mile from the ocean, the Atlantic Ocean.
Mm-hmm.
We had 3 hurricanes hit us about 7 or 8 years ago in a 1-year period. They made landfall within a mile of my house.
Oh.
And we had the first one, it caught me off guard. It's my first hurricane I'd been through. But having grown up so far away from stores, you know, the 3-day you're out of stuff, kind of, you know, the last minute mentality of most people, that was not the way I grew up. I grew up rural West Virginia. If you needed something and you didn't have it, you didn't get in the car and drive. The store was 40 minutes away. And they close at 8:00. It's not like there's a Walmart 24 hours, you know, open anywhere nearby. So if you didn't have it, you just did without. But when we go to the store, if we needed, I use this all the time. If you need a deodorant, you bought 2 or 3. And when you used one, next time you went to the store, you bought another 1 or 2. We stockpiled it. We were preppers long before we knew that there was a term called preppers. We were just ready to live. We were self-sufficient as much as possible. We had gardens. We hunted for a lot of our food. We fished all the time. There wasn't there probably was 3 or 4 days a week that we ate off of stuff that we produced, harvested, gathered ourselves, not because we were preppers or survivalists. It's just the way we lived. I didn't know that that was anything special until I moved to town and found out that, well, I can go get a loaf of bread at 2 a.m. That's convenient, and that breeds a level of complacency in us that it's mm-hmm. not good. So we went through the first hurricane, and it was shit. They shut off alcohol sales. Their stores, the 2 days before it hits, because you've got 4 or 5 days warning, 2 days before the hurricane gets here, you go to the store and there's nothing. The trucks stop running. There is no bread. There is no milk. If you can find, you go to the store and you'll find asparagus tips, because no one wants to spend $3 a can on asparagus tips because a storm's coming. It's the stuff that you find in the store, like, nobody eats that. That's why it's left. Mm-hmm. It was like someone went through and looted the store. You go through and there's just nothing. It's a scary sight to walk through a store that's always jam-packed full, and there's nothing there. So it kind of scared me, and I thought, well, hell, that's not the way we grew up. We never had a problem. We would get snowed in. We would get flooded in. We had a river on across our road on two sides of us where we grew up, and in the summertime, we'd get a heavy rain, and we'd be stuck at the house for 2 or 3 days. It was just normal. If you didn't have a four-wheel drive and knew how to get across the ridges to get to a low water bridge where you could get across, you were stuck. So we were always prepared, having not known that there was a label for it. It just made it's preparedness is not something special. It's common sense if you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
So the first hurricane, I was surprised. The second hurricane hit us a week or two later, maybe a month later.
Wow.
And in a month, I was ready. I had a generator at that point. I still hadn't pulled down any of my shutters from the last hurricane. Don't get me wrong, it was tough. We were 3 weeks without power, grid power, but I had a generator. It was bearable. It wasn't fantastic. A year later, when we got hit by the third one, we were 27 days without power. We had running water. We had air conditioning. We had electric in one room. What basically my whole house, I've got about 1,600 square feet. We come down to the master bedroom. It's a concrete block house. Throw an AC unit in the window. Run a generator out back. We have everything we need. But after the hurricane's passed, I have internet again. I have electric. I have running water. I have all the comforts that you need to get by. And some that you want, and we have. I'm going to step aside on a tangent here. I understand today is your 1 year anniversary being dry, James.
Yesterday, yeah.
Yesterday, I'm sorry. Congratulations on that.
Thanks.
I have people in my family that have the affliction and have not addressed it. For you to face the animal in its face and stare it down and beat it, it's fantastic. I applaud you.
No, I'm extremely proud of him.
That is a huge thing.
Yeah, I honestly thought, believe it or not, a little over a year ago, like 18 months ago, me and my wife, he would come over our house and he would drink and he would get drunk and then he would insist on going home to sleep in his own bed at night, and we tried everything to get him not to. I mean, I spent a lot of times thinking, he's going to end up dead.
Yeah.
He's going to end up dead. He's going to run into it. He's going to wrap his car around a tree, go off a cliff, or kill somebody.
Well,
I never thought I'd see this day. And I am so
not,
happy.
And I'm
that
glad
I
that
not.
He has fixed the problem. That is a huge beast to fight. It's probably one of the worst things that I can dream of. Any type of substance that you're addicted to is a horrible, horrible monkey on your back. But having said that, one I mentioned earlier, one of the first things they do after a hurricane passes through is shut off alcohol sales. So you have no power. Your work is closed down. There's nothing to do but stare at each other. There's very little air conditioning. It's muggy as hell after a hurricane passes through. You want a beer. My wife, I'm a firm believer that my wife is able to cope with me because of a beer or two to take the edge off of my sarcasm and her having married far below her station. I am absolutely, I am 100% certain that my wife is a different social class than myself. I am a little more coarse. I'm a lot more coarse than she is. And I pushed the limits a lot with her. So the fact that she could not have alcohol after a hurricane when there's nothing else to do, frustrated her. I'm like, well, I'm from West Virginia. This can't be a big deal. I know a lot of people that make their own alcohol. So I went through the process, did a little bit of research. Thank you, Google and YouTube. And I can make a serviceable alcohol. It's a young fruit wine out of Juicy Juice, a 2-liter bottle, and some yeast in 3 days. Nice. So by the time I know there's a hurricane coming, if we don't have anything stockpiled in the alcohol department, I can make some and get us through. Not proud of that, but, well, okay, I am a little proud of that. Because alcohol, again, not to rub your nose into it, James, but alcohol is a fantastic trade item.
Oh, no. I mean, for everyone that can pick it up and have a drink and go about their life, you know, it's good. I mean, it has a lot of benefits. And I used to call myself an amateur beer historian. but there's just no one drink for me. So
having grown up with an alcoholic parent, it was an adopted father. It's something that I saw on a regular basis. It was the same thing that the driving in under the influence all the time, wondering how the hell we're going to get home safely. And I'm a firm believer that alcohol addiction is a genetic, there are predisposed people. They've got the gene. I don't have it. I can try to get drunk and have 3 or 4 drinks and just say, you know what, not interested anymore, and just stop. And on top of that, alcohol is more expensive than, say, a glass of iced tea. I'm too cheap to get drunk on a regular basis.
Yeah. My wallet's much happier. Yeah.
Oh, I'm
sure
it is. That's one of the things that's going to help you in your homesteading is the added expense isn't there.
Right.
So there's going back to the hurricane thing, I became the person in my neighborhood that if something goes wrong, I get a knock on the door. My next door neighbor, a retired divorced gentleman, his daughter lived with him for a while. She locked herself out of her house, knocked on the door. She says, hey, can I borrow your phone? I need to call my dad. I'm locked out. I'm like, your keys inside? She goes, yeah. I said, you want me to get you in? What do you mean? I spent 2 years as a locksmith. In less than a minute, I had her in her own house. She's like, who are you? but they rely on me now. I've got a widow next door. If there's something going on, she comes, knocks on the door. Hey, can you help me with this? Absolutely. Survival, preparedness, homesteading, it's not a one person or one family pastime, endeavor, whatever you want to call it. You have to incorporate and utilize and accept and sometimes help and carry the folks around you. It's a lot easier to help the person next to you who's not going to be any good in a situation like that than it is to not help them and have them looking over your shoulder. Better to keep keep your friends close and your enemies closer. If they're not going to help you, you help them. First of all, it's good karma, and second of all, if you help them, they're far, far less likely to break into your house and steal your bag of rice in the middle of the night. The bag of rice has its uses, but goodwill is a fantastic thing. I have found the longer I've lived in this neighborhood, the more I found it. Oh, look, I didn't know that guy. He's a musician on the weekends, long hair. He's a surveyor during the week. I ran into him at a gun show. I'm like, hey, Brian. He's like, hey, what's up? I'm like, I didn't know you were. Oh, yeah. I got a couple. I'm looking to get an upgrade to. I'm like, really? You? He's like, oh, yeah. Your wife knows? He goes, oh, yeah, she knows. Yeah, she goes with me shooting from time to time. I'm like, really? It's fantastic to know that you've got neighbors that think alike. And not only do they think alike, you know that when we made that contact. Now, I've talked to him for years, but after that, you know, we have a little closer bond now. We'll talk about, hey, did you notice that car going through here twice? I'd never seen that car before. They were driving slow, weren't they? Yeah, they were. I said, you want me to make a phone call? He goes, no, we'll just keep an eye on them. That kind of thing. You have to work together. Your lives are entwined, whether you like it or not. You know, they say you can't pick your family. Well, once you've moved in, you can't pick your neighbors. You have to learn to live with them, whether you like them or not. So, and that's been one of the things I've been blessed with in this location was neighbors that understand that I am who I am, and I'm completely willing to help and to give back to you guys, you know, as my neighbors. Here's some eggs. Don't say a thing. So it's nice. As of right now, I don't have chickens in my backyard, but from my front yard, I can see three houses that do, and we are not zoned for it. That's the power of community. I had a local law enforcement officer, county level, come knocking on my door one day. He just happened to catch me home during the middle of the week. Knocks on the door, says, "Hi, I'm so and so from this law enforcement agency." He says, "There's no easy way to do this. Do you have chickens?" And my mind, a million miles an hour, I think of all the possible answers I can give him. "No. What are you talking about?" "Yes. Who the hell are you? Get off my property." And I looked him in the eye. He's a badge wearing official. I said, "Yeah, I got chickens." He's like, "Well, here's the story. I've got a complaint. There's a white chicken, a small white chicken with a black spot on its back, which is unusual in itself. A white chicken with a black spot." I said, "Really?" He said, "Yeah." He's a small chicken, and it's been roosting on a guy's car in his carport. He said, "Do you have any white chickens?" I said, "I do. I have one, but I can promise you that chicken is not getting out of my yard. I've got a 3-foot fence at the lowest spot. It's 6 foot around some of the places. It's not my chicken." How do you know that?" I said, "Well, one, I clipped their wings on one side so they can't fly. And two, you take one look at the chicken and you'll agree with me." He goes, "Well, you, I said, "Come on, I'll show you." So we go around back. As we're walking through there, I said, or he says to me, he says, "You know you're not zoned for chickens." I said, "Well, I looked at the county regulations. County regulations say that you can have any animal you want as long as it's not a smell or noise nuisance." He said, "That is true. That's the county level regulations. But the zoning board says that you cannot have livestock in a residential area." I'm like, "Seriously?" He's like, he says, "Yeah, I'm not sure how we're going to have to deal with this if you've got chickens here." I'm like, "Shit." He's like, "Well, let's worry about this complaint first. We'll address your problem later." He says, "I'm not sure how I'll pitch it to the zoning board, but I've got to do something with this." So I take him around back, show him my chickens, and he sees that my chickens are clipped on one side. He tells me that, "Yeah, I've got chickens too, and that's how I keep mine from roaming. If you clip one wing, when they go to try to fly, they spin. So they can't get any, you know, they can't get enough height to go in one direction to try to get over a fence. Now, if you clip both wings, they can beat the hell out of the wings and sometimes clear a 3-foot fence. So you only clip one side." He's like, "Okay, I appreciate that you've done that. You've done a good job there." I said, "Let me show you my white chicken." I picked up 4 Cornish cross chickens about a year prior. Cornish cross are a fast breed, fast growing breed. You go from chick to harvestable bird in about 9 weeks. They're Franken chickens. It's mostly just hybrid nature to the birds. They're not genetically modified. It's just the perfect storm of growth, so to speak, between it's Cornish and Leghorn, possibly. I don't remember the exact cross, but you breed this rooster with this breed of rooster with this breed of hen, and you get these birds that grow super, super fast. So fast that a lot of times if you put them on a high protein feed, they grow so fast that their bones can't keep up with their body weight, and they'll break their legs just from their body weight. They have heart problems. They're a very short-lived bird. The typical Cornish cross doesn't live more than 4 or 5 months if you just let it go. I had one that was a year and a half old. It looked like a basketball with 3-inch feet sticking out under it. He looks at this bird and he's like, "Damn, that's a big chicken." I said, "You see my hen house there? There's about a 18-inch jump from the ground up to where they went into the hen house, so it was elevated." I said, "The chicken can't get into the hen house to roost." He's like, "Yeah, that's not the bird. I can promise you that." So he says, "Here's my card. Give me a call if you find it, and I'm going to go set a trap to try to catch this thing, and I got to figure out how we're going to deal with you and your zone violation." So he leaves. I mean, he was really nice about it. He was understanding. He told me that he doesn't have a problem with folks trying to raise some of their own food. The problem comes in where we have Hispanics in the area that want to raise 12 goats in a quarter acre backyard. There comes a time when you've got just too much. It doesn't matter legal or not, it's just wrong. And those are the ones that make it tough on the rest of us. You know, I try to stay under the radar, and they don't. They just don't care. So he says, that's the problem I have. He says, we'll let's deal with the complaint first on this small bird, and then we'll see how we're going to deal with yours. So he leaves, and I am spitting mad. I'm ready to sell the house, put a yard and a sign in the yard, and just leave. I am livid. My whole world turned upside down. I'm pissed because the man has come in and wants to change my life. So I'm spitting mad and cussing and swearing, and my wife's like, what's the problem? I tell her. She's like, just calm down. She says, don't you have work? Yeah, I have work. So I left and went and did a job. I was gone about 3 hours. The irony of this boggles my mind. I'm coming home, driving up my street, and I see two kids carrying a white chicken that's not mine. I have never seen another chicken up to this point in my neighborhood ever. The day that the cops show up looking for the chicken, there's this guy. So I go, say, hey, where'd you guys get the chicken? Oh, we saw it over there. Oh, we was running around. We caught it. We thought it was someone's bird. I said, it is. I said, the sheriff's looking for it. You mind if I give him a call and have him come talk to you? He goes, no, we don't want to talk to the sheriff. I'm like, he's looking for this bird. Well, here, you take it. Fine. So I take the bird, call him up. First thing out of the sheriff's mouth says, all right, I told him I caught the bird. He goes, you caught the bird, huh? He's thinking that I had the bird the whole time. Guarantee that's what he was thinking. Because I've got chickens. There's one in the neighborhood. That's just what it looks like. It was, you know, circumstantial evidence pointing towards it's got to be my bird. So now the guy has chickens of his own. He says he'll come and pick it up the next day because he's got some other stuff to do. Calls me the next morning. He says, hey, listen, can you just keep that bird with your birds? I said, you've got chickens, right? He goes, yeah. I said, if I take that strange bird and introduce it into my flock, they're going to kill it. And at that point, he realized I wasn't lying. So thankfully, he was exposed enough to having raised chickens to know that strange birds introduced, they get the hell beat out of them if they even live. And this bird was so small, it had been toast. So he comes and picks up the bird, and I just happen to be there. He says, listen, I want you to know that I appreciate you doing this, and so I thought it was yours for a while, and then what you said made sense to me. He's like, my problem is been resolved, so I appreciate that. And as far as I'm concerned, you don't have any issues here. I said, excuse me? He goes, I don't need to tell anybody about what you got going on. It's your own business. I said, I really appreciate that. Thank you very much. I said, that just made my week. And that was it. I left, never had a problem again. So it was nice to know that not all law enforcement people miss the point of what's going on, why they're there. The protect and serve part is far more important than drumming up money. And that's... But sometimes, depending on what they're doing, they might be doing that for your own benefit. And this blew my mind. My next door neighbor, the widow, came over. We were talking one day, and she says, "I got pulled over for speeding. We've got some 25 mile an hour zones that should just flat shouldn't be." She says, "I was doing like 45 and a 25, and I got pulled over. And I went to give him my information. He says, just leave the registration in the glove box." I'm like, well, don't you want to see that? He says, no. I don't want to see it. She says, if I'm going to write you a ticket for this speeding in this zone, your ticket's going to be about $180. I'm just going to give you a warning, and I'm going to give you a ticket for no registration. But I have my registration. He says, listen, I didn't see your registration. I'm going to give you a ticket for your not having no registration. It's a $10 ticket. You get on the courthouse, show me registration. You pay your $10, you're done. And then it dawned on her. He's not being a jerk about it. He's actually, he has taken money over. He could have just let her go, but instead of taking $180, he took $10. So there are some good ones. I have a real good friend. I'm not going to mention his name here because he is in law enforcement. He tells me all the time that he is probably the worst deputy they have in this county. And I'm like, why is that? He goes, I won't write tickets. I'm like, what do you mean? He says, if I pull over a working class guy because he's got a taillight out or he's speeding or something, if he's a legitimate worker, I can't do anything to him that I could sleep with. So I'll just warn him and then send him on his way. And to me, that's what it's all about. In my opinion, this guy is a stand-up human being that I would trust implicitly. This is a fantastic guy. But on the other hand, I meet some that are not like that. So this is still a small this county is a small county, so there's not too many people that you run into that you don't know or you don't know someone. So there's still quite a bit of the good old boy organization going on. And the fact that I try to live that good karma life, I know enough people that either owe me favors or I've treated right that I could probably get away with stuff that I wouldn't in a big city. So again, it's the community. Community is everything. So remind me after we get off the air, I'll tell you a little bit more about this cop friend of mine. You will be impressed. I don't want to spread. You know, just go ahead and edit this part out. This is a fantastic guy. So. Rabbits. Oh. Okay. Yes. Yes, I have. I have a friend that I worked with. It was actually it's the friend with the political science. I have a friend with a political science. Ugh, shit, let me start this again. You're going to have all kinds of fun with the editing. The friend that I mentioned earlier with the political science degree, he and I worked together when I was in corporate America, back when I lived in a cubicle underneath the fluorescent lights that suck your soul out. He was in sales, and he knew I wasn't happy there. There's too much BS that the older I get, I just can't deal with in corporate America. And his father-in-law was a rescue diver in Vietnam. On my website, if you look up Ridge Runner, he's who I'm talking about. He had a career in Vietnam. I believe it was 5 tours. He did rescue diving. He was in search and rescue. He honestly worked with the Air America folks. That's when I can get a story out of him, it's fantastic. But he was he went into commercial diving. He did all kinds of construction work. He's done commercial work with welding and whatnot. And he was looking for someone to do dive work as a test case for the pool repair thing underwater. And I left corporate America and came in to work with him. And he was looking for someone to go to the Carolinas to work on a wreck that I cannot name still, because it's still out there. But they basically went out, they're always looking. He works for a treasure company that, I'm just not going to mention names for any of this stuff because it's sensitive information. Yeah. Even as much as the fact that this company was working in the Carolinas, it's enough to give some, if someone were to pick it up, could lead to repercussions. But this guy, Bridge Runner, works for a company that he's worked for 25 years. They've got millions and millions of dollars in gold and silver on their record as being found. And they needed somebody to go out and do some probing. We had a 40-foot let's see, it was a 40-foot steel line. We were jetting down into the bottom of the ocean in 12 different spots where the person doing the research had come up with some interesting mag hits. You take a giant PVC frame with some electronics on it and drag it behind a boat and look for magnetic anomalies. And any magnetic anomaly that has a certain signature, you mark it off, and then you send people back to start looking closer at that spot. Well, this guy had 12 of them, and he was adamant that this is the spot. This is going to be it. One of these is going to be it. And this was looking at $4 or $5 billion find if we were to find everything. This was huge. This is a wreck that it was one of the Spanish fleet coming out of South America that was just fat loaded with gold. I mean, just ridiculous fat. I looked at the write-ups. I'm like, oh my gosh, just one little piece is all I want to find. So I went up there. It was a 14-day trip. It was straight up work. The difference between doing this and digging ditches is I was underwater. The pay was better than I expected. The fact that what they were doing was just insanely different from anything I've ever done or seen, or you know, to be involved with something that's that much of a glorious niche in the work world was really interesting. The folks that I got to meet and talk with were amazing. We had the sponsor, the person that was actually sponsoring the trip, a multi-billionaire sitting on the boat with us. The guy stroked a $50,000 check to fund this trip. And I'm talking to this guy. This guy is literally on the Forbes top 50 of the richest people in the world. And I'm sitting and talking to him like he's, you know, like I'm talking to you. He spent a lot of time on his phone to deal with whatever business he was not attending to at the time. But when I got a chance to talk to him while we were in between relocating from spot to spot, I said, listen, I understand that you and I live completely different lives. Your world and my world, other than today, will probably never, ever touch anywhere near each other again. But you know, what is a person with what kind of money you have and what, you know, what your lifestyle is? I mean, what do you do for fun? What are your hobbies? He said, I used to fly. I love flying. And then my grandfather crashed a plane on one of his trips to a third world country looking for resources. And we wanted to go. My brother and I and my father wanted to go find this plane. And we went and we spent about 4 years and something like $2 million trying to locate it and actually found it. And we got into diving and the treasure aspect of underwater hunting kind of piqued my interest. So right now, my hobbies are treasure diving. I said, really? I said, how many times have you been? He said, this is my first trip. So we're working in water that was about 20 feet deep. About our 10th stop, the dive master tells me, listen, the sponsor's going to go down with you in the water. I'm like, boss, there's like 2 foot of visibility. He said, right. Don't do anything but stick right on his tail. Don't lose him. We need him. He signs the checks. So we go down. We're in 20 foot of water. He's got the metal detector, and he's, you know, waving it around like it's an orchestra director, which is not the way to do it. He's all over the place. He's in the water for maybe 10 minutes, and he turns around and looks at me, and he's got water halfway up his mask, doesn't know how to clear his mask. So he motions for up, and he's okay. So we go up and get him out of his gear, and he says, man, that was so much fun. That was fantastic. And he goes, you know, he goes back in, and I go back in the water, and we finish our work. And later that evening, I'm talking with, you know, the boss, the guy that got me into the thing. And I said, he thinks this is treasure hunting. Well, he says, in his world, it is. He writes a check. He shows up. And now we're a footnote on a conversation around the cocktail table before he goes into a business meeting. He spent $50,000 so he can add a footnote to a sentence. It's interesting that a lot of treasure hunting isn't so much, you know, hunting and finding treasure. It's finding the folks that want to finance it. So But having said that, I would gladly do it again. I worked harder doing that than what I do on my regular job. I gave 150%. I was stoked, excited. Everything was shiny and new to me. And they told me and said, you did a great job, what you did. If we ever have any more work, we'd be more than happy to hire you out again. And I haven't heard from them in 6 months, so... It's a very niche market. They're very closed-lipped with everything, and it's I may get a call in a week. I may never get a call again, but I can now mark that off my bucket list as treasure diver. I've officially gone treasure diving. I found a starfish. It was a blue starfish. That's about the extent of what we found, though. All right, listen. On one of my jobs down in Palm Beach County, a high-end home, it's probably a $400,000 home, I'm in the pool working, and the owner's there. He was a common Joe kind of guy. Nice to work with those. Excuse me. He leans over to look at what I'm working on, and I see that he's got a silver real in a gold setting on its giant rope necklace. I'm like, oh, that's a cool necklace. Did you find that? He goes, I found the coin. And I found the necklace, and I just had it put in the setting. I'm like, really? I said, you dive offshore? He goes, no. I found this on the beach. I said, really? So we got to talking. He would go out when he moved into South Florida. He would go out onto the beach in the dry sand area where people hang out and find not gold coins from Spanish wrecks, but gold rings and necklaces and iPods from where Aunt Sally set her iPod down and lost it. He put $100,000 down on his house when he bought it from the gold he found on the beach. You can take a metal detector on just about any beach up and down, any beach that's populated here in Florida, and make a decent wage. You might not find anything for weeks at a time, but when you find something, it's almost always a big score. You'll find bottle caps and pull tabs and juicy, you know, what are the foil packs, you know, the little foil pack juice box things. I talked with him, found a used metal detector, a Prism 5, a White's Prism 5, which I highly recommend, by the way, for a starter. They're about $500 new. I picked mine up for $250 used, and in a week and a half, I had it paid for. I was lucky enough to early on, and that's the thing. If you find something early on, you'll never stop. I was out hunting around, and a lot of times you'll scoop something up, and someone nearby says, "Oh, I just dropped something there. Is that mine?" And I'm like, "Here you go. You got to stop throwing your bottle caps down." So you know, you always keep a spare bottle cap or whatever in your pocket. And if someone walks up, I'm like, "Oh yeah, this is what I found." So I made a scoop about a week and a half in, and I looked down into my scooper, and there was a gold necklace with a gold medallion and a gold ring on it with an amethyst in it. And I looked down, pulled it out of my scoop, put it in my pocket, and just kept going. About 30 minutes later, I'd walked a half mile down the beach where nobody was. I reached in my pocket, pulled it out, and I went, holy shit, I just scored. Pulled out my phone, I called the wife, I'm like, guess what I just found, About $700 worth of gold. There's no markings on it. There's flat nothing on it that can tell anything other than the person graduated apparently in 89. That was the medallion. Was it just said 89 on it. That paid for my first one, and it started me on buying my second one. At one point, I had four metal detectors. Metal detecting on the beach. James, if you want to come down to Florida, I'll put a metal detector in your hand. I'll show you how to do it, and I'll just let you have at it, and you'll probably make enough money. If you do it long enough, week or two, you'll make enough money to cover your trip down here and then have some leftover cash. It's crazy. It's work. Don't get me wrong. You got to walk miles and miles in loose sand, swing that damn metal detector for hours at a time, but it only takes one hit. And people lose some ridiculous stuff on the beach. I am serious when I say you can make $30,000-$40,000 a year if you work at it like it's a job, doing metal detecting. Just walk on the beach. I see the same guys out there. I only go to two beaches mostly, but it's mostly just one beach. And I cover about a half mile up and down the beach from the mean high tide mark, or excuse me, the mean low tide mark to the top of the dunes. That's in the state of Florida, that's fair game. If it's down below the mean low tide mark, that's state. You have to report anything you find that's over 50 years old to the state. If you find a wheat penny in a foot of water, you got to call up the state and say, hey, I found this. And you have to report it to them and possibly turn it over to them. It's crap. So I hear rumors of folks that find stuff in the water and then throw it up on the beach and then pick it up. Oh, I found this up above the dry sand. There was a guy that found a leather bag, with a jewelry box in it with jewels in it from one of the Spanish fleets. And it was like $400,000 worth of stuff in it. And I can almost promise you it was relocated before he found it, before he found it. You know what I'm saying? There's just in the stuff that's lost in the last five weeks, you can make a living. There was a report of this guy shows up at the local dive shop. They also rent metal detectors. His wife had lost a 3-carat diamond ring, platinum ring, $7,000 ring. And it's funny, after I did that, I went down to the beach a couple times, and there's three times the number of metal detectors out there that you normally see. Word gets around. That's the one thing you got to worry about is you don't want to step on the local's toes. If that's his spot, there's no law that says it, but you might come back and have a tire slash or something if there's something big out there. It's interesting stuff. There's definitely territorial issues. So, but having said that, I've gone right behind people that, you know, there's a guy with a metal detector and he'll go through an area and I'll go right behind him and find stuff that he missed. Now it's like a quarter from last year, but it's still something. So anyway, yeah, metal detecting and treasure hunting is a lot of fun. So, and it's the only hobby I've ever found that pays for itself ever. So not a problem. I love talking to you. And you know, you say that I motivate you. Absolutely. You motivate me, my friend. You are living my life. I if it weren't for the wife and kids, I'd be living in the woods right now. I've got my cave picked out if I ever get divorced. Wasted effort, talent. You need to do something about that. There's so much that you're just good. He should motivate you off the couch and onto that paleo diet. No problem, man. Take it easy.